Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Across the country, the college class of 2015 has graduated and is now on the hunt for a job, the kind that pays the bills, not least of which often includes hefty student loans. The National Association of Colleges and Employers in a recent report predicted a rosy outlook for new job seekers, but that's rosy with some qualifiers. Joining us now is the research manager for the National Association of Colleges and Employers, Andrea Kantz. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How did you measure the jobs outlook for the class of 2015?
Well, each year we survey our employer members to see what their college hiring projections will be. And what they're telling us is that they plan to hire about 10% more new college graduates than they did last year.
Do you know why? Just because there's more to do or more college graduates?
They actually have more open positions for new graduates, so that's positive news for this year's graduates.
When it comes to open positions for graduates, how do you define that?
Well, we actually asked the employers how many positions they posted and the number of applications that they received. So that's where we got the actual number of positions.
And do you know why more college graduates this year than last year?
They have a lot more openings this year. They're looking to fill openings that were created from retirement. Also, it's important for them to maintain their talent pipelines and fill them with new graduates.
Did you break this down by part-time, full-time, internships, that kind of thing?
For the most part, we asked about full-time positions.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Andrea Kantz. She's a research manager at the National Association of Colleges and Employers. If you have a question about the jobs outlook for recent graduates, college graduates, that is, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd love to hear from employers who can add to this conversation about why they're hiring more college graduates this year than last. How does the numbers, the 10% uptick this year over last year, how does it compare to recession outlooks or recession era outlooks, I guess, going back to 2008-2009?
Those numbers actually were decreases during that time. I think one of the worst years was a decrease of about 21.6%.
And what year was that? Do you know?
I believe it might have been
I'm sorry. Okay. It sounds like we've lost connection with Andrea Kantz of the National Association of Colleges and Employers. She'll be right back with us, I'm sure. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you're a recent college graduate who's looking for a job, give us a call today. We're going to be hearing from some experts. Scott Custis, he's an assistant director of Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences Career Services, will be joining us later on. And also Martin Yate, he's the author of Knock 'Em Dead, Secrets and Strategies for First-Time Job Seekers. Once again, if you want to email a question or comment, the address is allsides@wosu.org, or you can call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. Behind the headlines, there is so much more to know. How it all impacts the country, the world, your family. At On Point, we're working hard to shine a light on the way ahead, listening, challenging, inviting all perspectives, you, into an important national conversation, right here and online. Join us for the next On Point.
And you're listening to 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. You can listen to On Point this afternoon from 1 till 2. Cloudy skies for today. There is a chance of a shower or thunderstorm, a slight chance, a high of 81. Clouds for tonight, and showers and thunderstorms are likely, a low of 67. Cloudy on Wednesday with more chance of rain, a high of 79.
Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News is Central Ohio's most comprehensive source for news from anywhere around the world.
The case argues that the country is failing to protect Dutch citizens.
Across the nation.
For help regaining what the city had lost.
You know, we know the real Baltimore. We know.
In our community.
But the love for Jenny's hasn't waned. Many people have left love.
Listen to the difference. 89.7 NPR News. Global. Local.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Still with me is Andrea Kontz. She's a research manager at the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Andrea, before we were so rudely interrupted by technology, you were saying 21.6% was the biggest drop since the recession. And what year was that?
I believe it was late 2008.
Okay, so right at kind of the height then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how, what sorts of jobs are employers expecting to hire more grads in? I guess, what are the fields? Does that make a difference?
Yes, it actually does. Typically, they look to hire the same type of degrees. Usually, the top three are engineering, business, and computer science.
When you know, we hear about engineering all the time, but is it just an engineering degree? Or there's so many disciplines in engineering. Is there anything special about that?
Typically, the top two are mechanical engineers and electrical engineers.
Is hiring more recent graduates as opposed to people with more job experience a particular marker of something? You said maybe a lot more people retiring?
Well, I believe that the college job market, or at least from what we've seen, it typically follows the overall job market. So I think they're always an important part of employers' hiring practices. So they continue to hire new graduates along with other employees who are more experienced.
When I look at some hiring trends, business is always big, but not necessarily once you get into the higher degrees, the level of hiring isn't as great as it is with just the bachelor's degree, right?
Right.
Why is that? Wouldn't a MBA be more desirable than a bachelor's?
They are desirable. However, they command a higher starting salary. They might want to have a signing bonus, so they may be a little more expensive.
And then in some fields, like, say, physical therapy, a master's degree is almost absolutely required.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Joining us now is Scott Custis. He is the Assistant Director of Ohio State University's College of Arts and Sciences Career Services. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you.
So you've been sitting here nodding your head. All of this is very familiar.
It is.
How does it translate into what you do?
Well, we are supposed to try, our goal is to try to connect the employers with the students. And so we need to constantly be maintaining relationships with the employer community, finding out what their needs are, and then finding the best way to connect them with the students at Ohio State.
What do you do with a student body that isn't mostly engineering and business graduates?
That's a great question.
Engineering school is very difficult to get into at Ohio State.
And the engineering students are definitely in high demand. But now that we are recovering from the recession, we're finding more and more employers that are telling us that they want to diversify the skill sets of people that they're bringing into their organization. So when they're sitting around a conference table trying to solve problems, they don't want people only coming into that setting with an engineering degree mindset or with an accounting degree mindset. And you'll find many top-level executives that will say that they started out as an English major or psychology major. Yes, maybe they had to go on and get an MBA or get a higher degree to get to where they were, to where they are now. But they value having those other types of mindsets at the table. What they're looking for really are good problem solvers. So through any arts and sciences degree, those students should be learning how to be good problem solvers, how to be good analytical thinkers. And if they could really prove those skills to employers, many companies are looking to hire just the top students that they could find and figure that they could train them in the nuts and bolts of the day-to-day work that they have to do. Now, obviously, that's not if you can't do that if, you know, to do some engineering disciplines, but in many business type of disciplines, they're just looking to bring good, solid minds to the table.
Does that wash with what you found, Andrea?
Absolutely. Yes, it does. As part of our survey, we give employers a list of different skills or qualities that they'd like to see in their new graduates, and they give each one a rating from on a 1 to 5 scale. The top one was critical thinking, problem solving, teamwork, those type of things. So, yes, that is what we're seeing as well.
And are they looking at grades and university status, I guess, as much?
I think they continue to screen by GPA. They might not look at someone unless they have a 3.0 GPA.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the school, I don't think it's as important as one might think.
Do you find, Scott Custis, that you're trying to convince them that a state school like Ohio State is just as good, or is that not really much of an issue anymore?
No, we're lucky here at Ohio State that the employers come to us to a large degree. And it's a one-stop shop. They can recruit from everything from law students to engineers to designers to journalists here at Ohio State. So they like to come here. But they also, you know, to follow up on the point that was made, the soft skills are very important. So a lot of times an employer will be looking across a lot of degrees and disciplines, but they'll be saying, show me somebody that has great communication skills. And it's really a deal breaker. We're hearing from employers that one of the biggest things that they're finding is that some of the students, even though they have analytical or technical capacity, that they don't have some of the written and verbal communication skills. And sometimes those are deal breakers in the hiring process.
Well, Andrea Kontz, I want to say goodbye to you and thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Scott Custis will stay with us. He's Assistant Director of Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences. And we're talking about the class of 2015, what their prospects are for a new job, or I guess at the first job outside of college. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Members of the class of 2015 have hung up their caps and gowns, and most are now hunting for a job if they don't already have one. And they're competing for jobs that often are posted with caveats for experience. But hiring a rookie has its advantages. Still with us is the Assistant Director of the Ohio State University College of Arts and Sciences Career Services, Scott Custis. Thanks again for joining us, Scott. When did the job placement realm find a rung in the ladder of higher education? It hasn't always been there.
Well, parents, anyone who's footing the bill for a college education is looking for return on investment. And increasingly that is being held to less subjective standards. People want data in terms of what the outcomes are. So obviously a college education is a big investment and people are increasingly wanting to see those results.
And how does Ohio State do all things being equal?
There are different methods used across different college units. There are some units on campus where, due to their accreditation, they have to have very precise reporting numbers,
okay,
such as in engineering. In the particular college that I work in, arts and sciences, there aren't those same sort of accreditation issues. So it's a more voluntary type of basis. There's a much larger student population as well. So sometimes it's harder to find that data.
What is your sense about how they're doing?
how the students are doing in terms of finding, well, as the economy has improved and as we've gotten out of this recessionary period, we are finding that the students today are in a much better place to graduate and find positions than they were 5 years ago.
Who's going to you? Or do you go to the students? How does it work? Do they seek your help or do you kind of outreach?
We try to do a lot of outreach. We work with academic departments. We try to get referrals from the individual academic departments and advisors. And most of the time when a student comes into the office, we hear that, oh, my advisor told me to come here. So definitely it's a partnership between our office and the individual college departments to send their students our way. Although we do other types of marketing and advertising too.
How well, you work with companies all over the place to develop recruiting strategies, right? What would you say are some reasons to hire a recent grad? We talked earlier with Andrea Kantz from the National Association of Colleges and Employers, and she gave us some reasons, you know, diverse. Well, you did too, diversity and that sort of thing. But other than that, is it the wages, lower wages?
That's certainly a part of it, and they definitely feel that in many cases what they need this new associate to do is trainable within the organization. So they can just take pure raw talent and mold it into what they want that individual to do, whereas if they take somebody from the outside who has more ingrained work patterns, it might be harder to break other molds. And also there's a technology factor. Students these days are much more technologically adept in some ways. It just comes more naturally to them. And as that becomes more and more a part of everybody's workplace skills, they're finding that those students are more of a those individuals are more of a plug and play than maybe some people that have had more years work experience.
Andrea Kantz also mentioned critical thinking and problem solving as these kind of soft skills. And I was wondering, how in the world do you measure a person's ability to think critically fresh out of college?
And, you know, sometimes that type of question trips up students in the interview process because they're overthinking the question a bit. Sometimes it really has to do with what, you know, you were given a team project to do, and you had to sit down and start to develop a timeline and a set and prioritize and divide work amongst your team. And all of those types of things are considered problem solving skills. So it really is up to the student to think about their experiences and put themselves into experiences where they're going to have to work through a situation. It could be as simple as, I had a heavy course load this semester, and so how did I develop a schedule, prioritize, and figure out how I'm going to break down a research project into meaningful pieces that I could chip off one by one to reach a successful conclusion? And so sometimes employers have told us that they just want to hear a student talk them through that process to prove that they have thought through that in a reasonable manner.
You said that you think they're overthinking it, but a lot of students might say, well, that just doesn't sound like what they're really looking for. It sounds too simple.
Well, I mean, if they do have internship experience or something along those lines, then that's
get them in the door.
Something that they did during that internship would probably be a good example. But in many cases, we're working with students to try to get the internship. So at that point, they may not have any of that real world experience other than a general part-time college job or the work they've done in the classroom. And they have to work and sell those experiences.
How big is the internship now?
It's huge. To give you an example, from our most successful students in the communications major, many of them have had 4 or 5 internships during the time that they're in school that have covered different facets of the communication industry. So just saying, in some of those instances, just to have one internship isn't always sufficient. In some of the social sciences, you may need to have multiple experiences. And employers really are looking at the internships in many cases as a pipeline program, as an extended interview process, and seeing if that's the right candidate to pipeline into a full-time hiring proposition at the end of the internship.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the class of 2015, its prospects for in the job market. They're not bad, up 10% from last year, apparently, according to the National Association of Colleges and Employers. If you're an employer, tell us why or why not you would hire a college graduate, I guess the question, the phrase is freshly minted college graduate. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. A survey of employers by the Chronicle of Higher Education last year revealed that college reputation, GPA, and course lists were at the bottom of the list of most important factors in who they hired. Where's the disconnect there? Because, of course, students are always urged to get into the best school they can, to get the highest GPA they can, and to take the toughest classes.
In many cases, the employers are looking for the factors that they can't be trained on. And some of those things, again, are those internal types of things. Is this person a good communicator? If they're not, it's very unlikely that I'm going to be able to train them to be a good communicator, regardless of what major they had taken, regardless of what school they had come from. If they're not the type of person who is well-organized, then it may be very difficult to teach that. If they just freeze up in group or teamwork situations and can't work well with others, they're not going to be able to train them on that for the most part. So again, the recruiters are basically going to various schools trying to skim the cream of the crop off the top. Those students are going to have similar backgrounds in terms of their educational background. But those, again, it all boils down to those soft skill factors that are really the differentiator in this case.
To what extent does Ohio State devote itself to helping students develop those soft skills?
Through the interview process, the mock interview process, we really try to train students to analyze their background. I like to tell a student to think about what are they most proud of over the past couple of years, and what skills have they derived, and really start to figure out ways to articulate these things. A lot of times the students have these experiences. We have so many talented students that are out there doing so many things, but sometimes they just, again, don't recognize the value of what they've done because it's just something they've done as part of a volunteer activity or a student club or organization, and they don't realize what they've done. So Ohio State basically gives the students immense opportunities to be leaders, to join clubs and organizations, to excel outside of the classroom and develop all these skills. And so part of what we do then is to try to get students to recognize the skills that they've developed, or if they haven't gotten to that place, to join clubs and organizations, to go out and, it could be something as simple as going out and being a tutor or being an after-school mentor or joining a nonprofit and doing some work for that organization and developing some of these skills. So we try to show students that there's a range of experiential learning opportunities out there, try to connect them with those things so that they're combining what they do in the classroom with these other activities that are going to make them the most marketable.
Is a place like Ohio State a typical, public university is devoted to the future employment of its philosophy majors, say, as it is to its engineering students?
It is, and it has to be. Partly, it depends on where that student wants to go. Sometimes some of the majors at Ohio State lead directly into a particular vocation. Mm-hmm. If you're an accounting student, you're probably going to be an accountant. But again, if you're a philosophy major, what are you going to be necessarily? So part of that is that discovery process that's very different for students in those different programs. So in many cases, it's starting at a different point and trying to work with the students to work through that discovery process. And there are resources on campus to look at aptitudes, look at skills, look at interests, and find what type of ultimate employment outcomes are a good fit for them personally if they're in one of those places where the match isn't maybe obvious.
So many students now have to work to keep from going into crazy debt, and they're going into crazy debt anyways. So they're often looking for a job just to pay the bills before enriching experiences. And how do you counsel students on that score? They've gone to all this trouble to go to college. They've got the debt, but now they feel like they just have to take the first thing that comes along.
Well, in some cases, taking the first thing that comes along is a step in a process. Not that we want any student to have to settle for something that they're not satisfied with, but at the same time, you also have to understand if a student exits Ohio State with maybe a less than stellar academic record, if they have not really developed the soft skills through involvement in clubs, organizations, and activities, the world is not necessarily going to be at their doorstep, and they may need to start somewhere in order to begin a career path and then prove themselves on the job. So, you know, you're dealing with a lot of different student life situations as they're graduating. Some have been very successful academically, socially, and in terms of skill development. Others, for a variety of reasons, maybe less so, and then they may have to start at a different point. But again, once you get that first job, you can prove yourself and you can start to work your way up.
How big of a deal is working during college?
For many students, obviously, it's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the university as a whole is constantly looking for new scholarship opportunities. We're actually working with companies and organizations to develop new scholarships and new grants for students. And then certainly the ideal is for internship experiences to be paid. And that is certainly a big issue, because if some industries and some organizations, government and nonprofit, for example, are exempt from having to pay their interns.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a student wants to enter a field where those internships are going to be vital to their success, if they are in high academic need, that perpetuates a cycle where they
right.
may not be able to reach some of their goals because of that issue. So sometimes that really requires, unfortunately, additional sacrifice on the student's part if they really want to follow some of those career paths.
I worked through college, and at the time, sometimes at the beginning, I thought, oh, this is such a drag. But in the final analysis, I was glad to have done it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good story to be able to tell employers about, you know, how hard you worked, the struggles that you went through. A lot of times employers are wanting to, again, see if this person's going to be a leader, a good fit. They're going to have that drive, that initiative. And telling a story about how hard you had to work just to make ends meet and to just get through your education and keep a solid academic record while maintaining all these other aspects of your life is going to be a huge selling point. So again, it is in the short term very much going to be a sacrifice.
But you're not going to have like those clubs and that kind of a thing. That's what you lose.
Right, but I think you could tell that story to the employer that they're going to understand. They're, you know, people come from different circumstances, and if you could tell them what your situation was, what struggles you had, how you overcame your obstacles, then that is also going to be a very potent marketing tool for you to use as an entry-level applicant.
I'm talking with Scott Custis. He is the Assistant Director of Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences Career Services. There might be some parents out there wondering, what in the heck is going on? Their kid's not finding a job yet. They just got done with college. Maybe Scott can help you, help them navigate the road ahead. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Some students are shooting for the right field, maybe, but they're not interested in a master's degree when that is critical. And I always throw out the physical therapy one because that's the one I know. They have to get a master's in to get a job. It's that competitive and it's that demanding. How do you advise that? How do you help them channel their resources and stuff in the right direction? I guess that's more of the advisor's role.
It to a great extent, it should be,
mm-hmm.
Especially when they're first entering and choosing to declare a major and charting their course. That should certainly be a discussion that comes up in terms of what are your goals and aspirations, and do you realize that a bachelor's degree in this particular discipline can only take you so far?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a student will reach us when maybe they're further down that road and they've committed themselves, and then we have to look at whether or not they're going to be satisfied with one of the entry-level positions in that particular field. And in some cases, if they're uncertain, it might be better for them to enter the workforce and maybe get a little bit of real-world experience before they jump into a master's degree, which may or may not be the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about that a lot, where somebody just, you know, kept following a path and dug themselves into a bit of a hole that now are in debt for a master's degree as well, and it still isn't a good fit. So
I guess that's an added benefit of an internship, is you find out if it's something you're actually interested in.
Right. You get to explore not just the type of work that you're going to be doing, but the culture of that particular type of industry. You get to network and talk with people about their career paths. And we definitely encourage informational interviewing, especially with alumni. And we've been doing some events where we're setting up online chat sessions and things of that nature where alumni are interfacing with the students. And just it's an open forum for those students to ask questions about what's a career path like in this field, or how did you get to where you're at? And sometimes that could be enlightening.
You know, I was going to ask you about the attitudes of graduates, recent graduates, and how they've compared over the years, at least through your experience, in terms of their realistic approach, what they can realistically expect as recent graduates and what they're going to get.
I actually feel that their attitudes have become more realistic over the years. When I first started 10 years ago or so, a lot of them were just expecting maybe that they'd graduate with a degree. And now when I have some similar conversations with students, they're like, oh, no, I understand that. I understand here's where I'm going to have to start. And here are here are the additional training or additional experiences I'm going to have to acquire. So I generally see that as a trend. I don't know exactly what to attribute it to.
I was going to say, because there have been the others where they want the corner office.
Absolutely. And there's always that subset that have somewhat unrealistic expectations. We still have some students that coming in some of the life sciences that have not done well academically that are still expecting to go on and become doctors. And sometimes we have to have that conversation with them. Yes.
Is that a hard one? I mean, do you actually have to?
Yes, there are times when we actually have to have that conversation where, you know, a student will say, well, I still plan on going to med school. And we're like, I just think that we need to have this discussion and talk about realistically
options.
Where you're at and what your other options are.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we're talking about the job prospects for the 2015 graduating class. But I suppose there are a lot of people still looking for jobs all the way back from the 2008 graduating class, still looking for that rung. Are they out of luck, or are employers open to giving people a chance to break in when they couldn't at the time?
For the most part, we do not see the employers reaching back into that population. And that really is unfortunate. I know there has been publicity about that being kind of a lost, you know, not generation. It didn't extend that far, but definitely a group of people that might have a hard time ever sort of catching up. The employers really are looking to come to campus, find students here and now, and really there's not much incentive on their part to really be looking back to those previous students.
So if people do come to you from previous, like their 2014 or even 2012, when it was still rough, what are you advising them? Go back to school, get some new skills? What?
Yeah, I mean, actually, our office does not work with students that go back that far. There is the Alumni Career Services office that they're generally referred to.
Okay. My guest is Scott Custis. He is the Assistant Director of Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences. We're talking about, once again, jobs for the new class of 2015 of college graduates. Give us a call if you have a question, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Working 9 to 5, it's a goal for many. Working at all is a goal for many, perhaps especially recent college graduates looking for that first job in a career ladder, they hope. The employment outlook for them is better than it has been in years, but the job hunt can be daunting, if not downright discouraging. Still with us is Assistant Director of OSU's College of Arts and Sciences Career Services, Scott Custis. And also joining us by phone now from Savannah, Georgia, is the author of Knock 'em Dead, Secrets and Strategies for First-Time Job Seekers, Martin Yate. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Hi, Ann. Hello, Scott. Good to be with you both.
where does a recent college grad even begin, all things being equal, assuming they're not headed to medical school or they don't have an engineering degree and they're not working on the certification as a public accountant and it's not really that obvious. Should they go with what they're interested in, even if it's another field? Should they follow their bliss? How do you direct people when they may not have finally tuned that themselves?
Okay, I think follow your bliss is some of the worst advice that's ever been given. And if you want to see how true that is, go to any restaurant in the theater district of New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, or San Francisco, and all those waiters in their 50s are actually sculptors and musicians and artists and painters. They stayed too long at the party. The people who follow their bliss and actually achieve it are people like, well, I don't know, have you heard of a guy called Harrison Ford?
Mm-hmm.
One of the world's biggest box office stars. Do you know what Harrison Ford did before he was a big box office star?
I do, because I read People magazine. I think he was a woodworker, or he still is.
He was a Finnish carpenter.
Yeah.
Made a very nice living in Hollywood, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
He had what we call in the knock and dead philosophy, he had a core career. And you recognize that pursuing your dreams, and most of us have dreams when we're our teenagers and we're in college and we dream of changing the world. And we hear this, follow your bliss, and we go out and try it. And it fails because we have no idea of how business works. And then the adults around us say, well, that's very good, Jimmy. Now, would you fold your dreams neatly and put them under the bed and let you grow up and get a real job?
Mm-hmm.
And what we should be doing is, yeah, let's put them under the bed for the time being. Let's still keep dreaming, but let's go and pursue a career where we can learn how business works, and perhaps at times in the future, in the ensuing years, we'll have other opportunities to go out and try our own business. Because at the end of the day, once we get into our 50s and age and wage discrimination kicks in, more and more people have to go and start their own business. So this core career, this central career for a corporation, now is very much on the job training for the entrepreneurial side we must all develop in the 21st century.
Scott Custis, do you feel like you have to have those conversations with some students to say, you know, theater is great, but maybe it's something you do as an amateur and work your way into it that way, but let's get you a job first?
Well, for example, with some of our theater and arts students, we've developed a major at Ohio State that is basically arts management.
Yes.
So that you might still be in that arena, but you have a fallback to do some of the more practical work. And then we also encourage students to, regardless what major they might be taking, to augment their skill sets by maybe taking a computer science minor or something that is going to be kind of that ticket to making themselves more marketable, regardless what industry they're going to be in.
You know, Martin Yade, I was wondering, is it too late for students who, after they've graduated from college, read your book, Knock 'em Dead, Secrets and Strategies for First-Time Job Seekers? Is it something they should be looking at maybe their freshman year in college?
First of all, good comment, Scott. The sooner we become aware of how the real world works, you know, as kids, we delivered everything and we just want independence from Scott and you and me and our parents and everyone else. And then we cross that last bridge, we graduate from Ohio State, and we cross that last bridge into adulthood, and suddenly, yeah, we're responsible for our lives and no one really cares what happens to us. Success or failure, it's up to us. So the sooner you start educating yourself about career and career management, the better. You know, when you go to college, you go there with your parents and you go to admissions and there's a double cherry wood doors and they tell you how good it's going to be for that $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 a year. You don't get to see career services. You're there, you have to go down the basement and knock three times on the tin door behind the boiler until you find overworked people like Scott trying to help people get their foot on the ladder of success. And in a world where we're going to work for half a century, change jobs statistically about every 4.3 years, and that's held true since the early 70s, have three or more distinct careers, learning about career management, learning how to get job interviews, how to turn them into offers, these are critical life survival skills. And, you know, career services at college universities should be the most exalted department on the whole campus. Why it isn't, I don't know.
Scott, do you feel exalted?
I wouldn't quite use that term. But
you're not in the basement, I hope.
We have been in basements. Oh. I had to chuckle at that. We have been in basements. We're not currently, but we have been, yes.
Right.
But we've been upgraded.
That kind of says it all. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you have a question, want to join the conversation. Martin Yate, we've heard that old adage that it's not what you know, it's who or whom you know. Is that really true?
Oh, it certainly helps if you know the chairman of the board or the chairman of the board's daughter or cousin. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'd rather know the person actually hiring, I guess.
Born a trust of areas.
Yeah.
But in one of the things that has happened in the last 25 years is the arrival of the internet and social networking, and now we can get to know people much more because there has come an awareness with the increasing rapidity of employment dislocations, and that is mindless loyalty to a corporation is not rewarded with long-term employment and job security. And more we are realizing at all ages, but especially of people entering the workforce for the first time, that networks of relevant professionals will help you through that long career much more than blind loyalty to a corporation.
It's an interesting thing that Martin brings up. As far as the social networking thing, how often do you find yourself trying to encourage students to just reach out, just send a letter to somebody, just send a note to somebody and ask them questions or learn more about their field that way?
In many cases, it's essential that they develop that either mentorships or just doing some of that informational interviewing, and certainly using LinkedIn is another avenue that we are encouraging. And in LinkedIn, you don't necessarily, students are intimidated by it, but we say, join one of the online groups and start to make comments, educated comments of what you're learning in the classroom in one of your user groups on LinkedIn, and that might start to get you noticed by professionals in that field, and that could be that first step in developing a network.
Hmm. Is that what you're talking about, Martin?
If I can add to that.
Yeah.
LinkedIn, premier networking site for professionals. Join it as soon as you hear about it. If you're still in college, that's fine. Look for groups that are relevant to your profession. Now, you want to build a network that has the following people in it. If you know the job that you're going to go after, first of all, you want the people who hold job titles 1, 2, and 3 levels above you. Why? Because those are the men and women who are going to hire you when you come out of college. And because of the way the wheel turns, when you change jobs again a few years down the road, they're still going to be a little bit further ahead of you and still be in a position to hire you. You want to make connections with the people who hold the same job title as you're going to be after and the people who interact with that job title. And when you're on these groups, be careful about making comments. Check likes of something someone else has written, and then ask to connect with them because you're members of the same group, and ask questions. You can ask a question about the job and the challenges of the job and one of the biggest problems you have in these areas. And you're gathering information and you're presenting yourself as someone who looks as if they are engaged in that particular profession and wanting to handle those tasks. And that means that the campus recruiters who are coming to Ohio State, that's exactly the kind of people they're going to look at. And many campus recruiters will tell you they've already got their best candidates before the career days even start.
One thing we were talking about, we have talked about, is wages. And a lot of recent grads don't rank that as high necessarily on their totem pole of wants and desires because they think it's not in the bag. What are they? And women often are I hate to word the word accused, but said to be, had not have good negotiating skills. Scott Gustas, do you talk about negotiating skills at the level that you're working with grads at?
We do have some workshops that deal specifically with that topic. We do have some educational pieces, and sometimes it's hard to make a blanket statement about that because it varies so much by industry. And so sometimes it's really coming into having a conversation about, where are you going in this particular career path? Because, again, if you are, communication student versus an accounting student, you know, you might need to have some very different expectations and a different process in mind to reach where you're going.
Unless you're the head of Discovery Channel, which I heard on the radio today, earned $100 million last year, but not that we're keeping track. Currently, communication media moguls are certainly media moguls. But what do you make of that, Martin Yate? How do you advise people?
Hey, start at the top, not at the bottom. That's what I say. $167 million a year for the Discovery Channel?
Something like it, 100 or something like that.
This issue of negotiation, you really raised two issues. One, negotiation, and one, the fact that women are still discriminated against. They still make about 78, 79 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem to change. However, let's look at this as the graduating class of 2015 and the fact that it's mostly parents that are listening this morning, and we don't want them back living off the fat of the land. We want that extra bedroom. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
In the great scheme of things, you graduate from college and you're at the start of a half-century career. Your job is to get your foot in the door, get your foot in the ladder. There isn't much negotiating room when you've got nothing to offer and you have no skills. The important thing, get your foot in the door, get some experience. You get 2 to 3 years down the road, then you can leverage it when you make your first strategic career move.
We have an email from a listener who writes, we have a child who just finished his sophomore year. Like the student you previously mentioned, he has aspirations to attend med school, but his GPA is hovering around 3.1. He does have excellent volunteer work experience, but we are thinking he needs to change his career direction. Thoughts? Scott Custis?
Well, I mean, and again, I want to be sensitive to this, that this is the parent saying that they think that the child should change their career direction. Ultimately, it is more that student's ultimate decision. But obviously, that student needs to have some conversation with people at the university, with advisors, with career services to initiate the discussion and see where they're at. At a 3.1 and at a sophomore level, it's not that's not completely out of reach in terms of, you know, amount of work and effort that it might take to get the GPA back up. But it's more, you know, is it a good fit, you know, and finding out right now if it's worth the toil and this stress and strain that it would take to get to that point. It's hard to say for sure. But again, that is a student that really should be having some very deep conversations with people within their academic department, with career services, to start to explore those types of issues.
Martin Yate, what do you advise people in terms of finding out what the right fit is and understanding that and coming to terms with it?
If I can use as an example what you and Scott have just been talking about, I come from a family of doctors and surgeons and nurses, and I faint at the sight of blood, number one. Number two, I have 7 kids. Number three, my eldest, with the highest SATs in the history of his high school, didn't graduate with his class because he'd refused to learn how to throw a medicine ball and quit gym 2 years before. So he got into a lesser West Coast college and pulled his act together in his first year and transferred to Berkeley and graduated with 2 simultaneous degrees. So sometimes it's a matter of coming to terms with what you want to do in life. Now, unfortunately, my kids don't listen to me. People can line up from all over the world to pay for an hour of my time. My kids don't listen to a word I say. So I suggest to parents, if they have someone at college, or tell them, go and find someone to talk to and talk to about this, who can say to them, look, if you're going to go into med school, you don't have to be a genius. You know, as the surgeons in my family say, you don't have to be clever to be a doctor or a surgeon. You just got to have a very good memory and be prepared to work long hours. So if he gets that it's not going to happen with the 3.1, great point average, and that he can pull his act together, maybe he can do it. But this is a time in life where they begin to see the future and they're having aspirations, and we really don't want to rain on their parade. It's much better if we can say, if you want to do this, you're going to have to first of all do A, B, C, D, and E. Then you can do it.
Well, Martin Yate, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure indeed. Thank you, Anne. Nice to meet you, Scott.
You too. Thank you.
Martin Yate, he's the author of Knock 'Em Dead, Secrets and Strategies for First-Time Job Seekers. Scott Custis, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Scott Custis, he's the Assistant Director of Ohio State University College of Arts and Sciences Career Services. Thanks to the AllSides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, AllSides interns Michael Hepburn, Shahina Sagiri, Ryan McFadden, Sam Buck, and Matt Berkeley, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.